Willkommen zum E-Com Secrets Podcast. Hier erfährst du, wie du mit deinem Online-Shop endlich deine Umsatzziele erreichst, ohne dabei abhängig zu sein von Amazon oder Online-Marketing-Agenturen. Wir zeigen dir, wie du deinen aktuellen Status quo durchbrichst und dabei nicht nur nachhaltig, sondern auch direkt in die Skalierung kommst. Und hier ist dein Host, Daniel Bittmann.
So, John Hagen, so nice that you're here in the podcast. First of all, how are you today?
Daniel, thank you so much for having me, man. I am great. How are you?
I'm also great. Thanks. So when we get to know each other, it was like 2, 3, 4 weeks ago. I was still in Spain in Gran Canaria enjoying the sun and working from there. We just had a little chat about this kind of lifestyle. But before we go into the deep dive, like the topics and the content, like maybe you can tell a little bit about your story and your journey, because you're like, You were the growth director at Pirelli, which is an 8-figure brand in Germany, basically. And we have a lot of German listeners in the podcast. And you were able to work with big brands. I saw Snow, Porsche Peanut, even Snorks is another a bigger German direct-to-consumer brand here in Germany. And just recently, last year, you started your own agency. So maybe you can tell your story a little bit.
Yeah, of course. So it's always an interesting journey for me, particularly, I would say. It's always funny dinner party conversation, right? You know, when you're getting to know someone and they ask you what you do for a living. For the last 3 years, my answer has been, I sell jewelry online in Germany. And it's always like, you do, you know, people are always, there's always a more to that story that's required, right? So let's see, I got into e-commerce about almost 4 years ago at this point. I was actually working in a barbecue kitchen in college. So I was paying my way through college and working college jobs. And I basically, after a while, I was working 3 jobs and just not seeing school as what everybody had told, you know, as plenty of entrepreneurs do, wasn't seeing school as what I was told that it was going to be. And was doing well in school, but just it was really what drove me to sort of, I guess the breaking point was, you know, how many jobs I was working and how many hours I was putting in that had nothing to do with my mind, but were just manual labor. And, I've had plenty of shitty jobs. So I said, enough with this. And I heard that I had actually a friend from high school was the guy who made the fidget spinner go viral, back in, I guess that was probably 2016, 2017. And I heard about this and I said, and I just, you know, my eyes lit up and I said, this is it, right? This is an opportunity for me to stop, you know, to do something in marketing while I'm still in school. That was the starting point of the idea. If you flash forward 6 months from when I started working with, his name's Jake Schmidt, the fidget spinner founder, and Nick Shackelford, I was, running their agency and I was the first media buyer who was working for their agency. Spending 7 figures a month profitably on Facebook, and we decided to move the whole operation out to Los Angeles. So I moved from a small city in St. Louis to Los Angeles to pursue what I perceived to be extremely valuable in digital marketing and Facebook media buying. We were only a media buying agency. Also, if you have any questions, feel free to jump in and stop me along the way.
Sure. Yeah.
We were only a media buying agency. We had no creative arm. It was extremely early on startup phase, but you know, the value that was there for me, and it was incredible to learn such a valuable skill and be mentored by some guys who, you know, had created this viral sensation. Amongst those clients were Snow Teeth Whitening, like you said, Posh Peanut, Detox Organics, Elias Skin, which is an Australian brand, and then down the road, Pirelli as a consulting client. So I started consulting with Pirelli, and I had this suspicion at the time, right? So I was working with this media buying agency, extremely strapped for time, very busy, didn't have enough hours in the day. And I had this suspicion that was like, okay, this is cool, right? We have around 10 clients. We're spending 7 figures a month. This is, you know, way more than I'm still in college at this time. This is amazing. I'm graduating around, you know, around here, and you know, also doing that, also working through online schooling. But what would happen if, when I graduated, if what would happen if I tried to help one company grow as quickly as possible? And so through that consulting, I developed a relationship with the co-founder of Purelay. His name's Etienne Espiner. And he was coming to the U.S. to look at the U.S. as a market for their business. And we met. We rode Harleys through Malibu. And we at the end of the time that we had gotten to know each other, he offered me a job, which I took. And I worked there for the last 3 years, basically. And then essentially pulled some of the strategies from that we had been leveraging to generate growth at Purelay to start my own agency. When I went in-house with Purelay, we were 25 people. I think I was employee number 25. And when I started my own agency, we were up to 180 people. So extremely quick growth. Growth goals were extremely ambitious, and also obtained every year that I was working under the umbrella of Purelay. So then I took these strategies and ran with them on the agency side, and that's where we are today. A little bit long-winded, but that's how I started working with Purelay, and that's how I started my agency.
Okay, I want to jump in there. So you just mentioned you are based in the United States. So Purelay is, I think, where's it based in Germany?
They're based in Mannheim.
Yeah, exactly. So how did it work out? Did you you moved here, or was it like remotely? How does it work?
Mm-hmm. So I worked remotely with sort of a hybrid solution. So I worked here in Denver, but before COVID happened, I was frequently traveling back and forth between Germany and the United States. I believe I spent in 2019 around 100 days in Germany. The kicker here is I don't speak German. But it's always a pleasure to get to visit Germany and enjoy and all the tremendous culture that's present there. So, but I've been a hybrid sort of remote worker for the duration of my time at Purelay.
Amazing. So post COVID, whenever you come back to Germany, we should grab a beer and meet in person.
I would like that. Yeah. Hopefully they remove, you guys have much more strict barriers to get into Germany than we do here in the US, or actually just stricter lockdown, everything. So hopefully they remove that one day and I'm able to come back.
Yeah. Nice. Maybe this year to the Oktoberfest. I don't know if you're into these things.
I've been to plenty of Oktoberfests and I'm always down to go to plenty more.
Amazing. Okay. So actually, we just realized when we had our first chat that we are on a very similar journey, I would say. Because for me, also before I started the agency mid of last year, I was mostly doing consulting for e-com brands. And maybe you can talk a little bit about your agency right now, because I think, when did you start, half a year ago or something?
Yeah, the starting point of the agency is always a bit tricky to nail down for us. While I was working with Purelay, I had a lot of inbound, right? A lot of people that were interested in working together, because I've been speaking about the work that we've done with Purelay, and I've been, just fairly vocal about what we've been, the cool stuff we've been doing there. And so it started as me kind of consulting for them part-time, but as the interest grew in working together, I had a friend, his name's Ryan, and now he's my co-founder, who was interested in taking on clients and was freelancing at the time. And so what I did was I just took all of my inbound and Ryan and I started working together. And then he took the agency and ran with it. And that's when we kind of said, okay, this is too much to just be a side business. Additionally, while I loved and value my time working with Purelay extremely, I really value it, being here and trying to make that work from just a personal perspective was quite difficult. So I was always traveling, frequently tired. I have a fiance here. I have a dog here. I have a house in Denver, so burning the candle at both ends and trying to make something happen, professionally as well as personally, just led to me, deciding to create something more domestically and build something where I live, as opposed to trying to always bounce back and forth.
Got it. Nice. So before we jump into all my questions and everything, I would like to talk a lot about a little bit what is motivating you? Like, what is driving you? Because I think you are a little bit like me when like sometimes you have insane workloads. I think about Q4 and e-com, where you work like insanely. And is there maybe something deeper, like a strong why or something which drives you?
Good question. I actually was thinking about this a lot last week. And particularly I can pinpoint one time. I was in the gym, and I was working out and just whatever, you know, I had my AirPods in, I was listening to music. And I was sitting there looking around, and I saw what I saw was Gymshark. And I'm looking around and I'm seeing, you know, what was 5 years ago, Nike, and maybe a little bit of Adidas and maybe a little bit of Puma, is now, even in the United States, even in Denver, flooded with Gymshark, you know, infiltrated with Gymshark clothing and Gymshark branding. And there's Gymshark slogans on the wall. And I was just sitting there thinking to myself, and I was like, if you are in e-commerce and that doesn't inspire you, you're in the wrong space, right? Like, that is what drives me, is the fact that there are these Goliath conglomerate, massive companies like Nike that can still be undermined and still be heavily, you know, developed competition for by the little guys, right? By the Ben Francis's coming out of Birmingham, UK, right? And you can still create something that comes into a saturated, over-competitive market, and if done correctly, can dominate.
Absolutely. So, like, I want to, in addition, I want to talk about a little bit, like, really quickly about my why, because I mean, as an entrepreneur, sometimes you also start because, okay, I want to reach this amount of money, or I want to hit this goal and something like this. And then like suddenly you will reach it, and then you are like, okay, what else? Like, I'm not happier than before. Like, what else is there in life? So what really drives me, and I see this more and more in the agency, that's why I love it, is like, it sounds a little bit cheesy, but we actively change people's lives. And like every second week or third week, another client is saying, hey, look, we needed to hire more people because we cannot keep up with the demand of the sales and stuff like this. And especially last year in COVID, when so many like retail stores like went bankrupt and I don't know what else, we were actively like helping people to a better life. And this is like really, really a strong why for me, especially. Like,
that's, yeah. I love that. That's so huge. First off, one comment is that I partook in that game as well, that, you know, I want to make a bunch of money. That's a young man's game to me, right? Like, I'm coming out of college and I've been eating hot dogs for the last 3 years and I'm ready to eat a steak, right? Like, that's like that kind of hunger where I understand it. I know it. I've had it. It's a young man's game, and it's incomplete. Going into what your why and how I completely resonate with that. I think for a long time, there was a box that people were forced into, right? Like, think the 50s to the 1950s to the 2000s, where you go to work, you come home to your wife, you have your kids, you have your white picket fence, the whatever, right? That whole box that the world lived in. And now what we're seeing, impartial, and it's weird to say this, but impartial thanks to COVID, right? COVID catalyzed this, is a hybrid solution that allows people to live outside of that box. And what I love about the agency, and it sounds like you as well, is the opportunity to provide that hybrid solution to people who don't fit in that traditional box.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. I would say let's dig into it. Let's go to the questions. I prepared a couple of questions. I'm not sure if we are able to answer all of them. But first, I want to start with your method. You often talk about like your holistic approach to marketing for e-commerce brand. Like, what do you see as a holistic approach? What is it?
Yeah. So I think that one of the common misconceptions in our industry, in e-commerce, in marketing, in Facebook marketing especially, is that there's like this magic media buying strategy where you turn this knob here, you crank this dial up, and you jump up and down with your eyes closed, with your hands tied behind your back, and then all of a sudden money comes out of Facebook. right? And this is something that we combat time and time again with the agency. And the diving in-house to a, with a brand taught me, and that is the easiest way to win with Facebook marketing, the easiest way to win with whatever you're doing, Pinterest, Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram, is to have a holistic approach. And by that, I mean build the brand outside of Facebook so that when you spend your hard-earned time, energy, effort, cash in Facebook, you're doing a successful and efficient job of activating customers in the platform. You know, in a world where CPMs, at least for us, what I saw across the board this year for Black Friday was extremely insane. I mean, CPMs, I've never seen CPMs like that. You know, sometimes drifting into the $20 to $30 mark. And I think that if you don't have a, if you have not successfully built your brand outside of Facebook with things like influencer marketing, public relations, retention, community, et cetera, when you go to put your money on Facebook, you're going to consistently be you're going to consistently be let down by the results. And then you're going to, what I see a lot, right, is you're going to be consistently let down on the results. And then you're going to blame your media buyer. And then you're going to fire your agency. And then you're going to say, this guy just doesn't understand it. And it's like, it, from my perspective, but if you're not building your brand outside of Facebook, you are doing your media buying team a disservice and putting them in a situation where nobody's going to win there, right? You have to build the brand outside of Facebook holistically and then deliver that, you know, then deliver your media buying strategy to the customer in hopes of activation.
Yeah, so basically the performance marketing part is like actual you put fuel into a already existing fire. Exactly. And then you leverage the everything the brand already have. Yeah, I'm totally with you. We have one fashion client and she was building in the last 2 years a brand only on Instagram, like no performance marketing, nothing. And we just started to implement like Facebook ads and Google ads and everything 3 months ago. We have a consistent ROAS of 10, which is really, really profitable for her. It wouldn't be possible if there is not already a strong following, a strong community. And all the time I see it, there are not so many followers. I think like 23K or something on Instagram. But every time this person, and she's the face of the brand, is doing a like an Instagram story, for example, yesterday, like revenue insane, like instantly goes to 10K, sometimes even 20K within hours. And then you add performance marketing. It's like a winning combination, I would say. Even I want to add what you said. Also not only like focusing on Facebook ads, what a lot of entrepreneurs are doing, but seeing it as a big picture. So Facebook is like push. Like people see the brand for the first time, they see the products for the first time. But at the same time, you will see also the, like, Google searches will increase or Amazon sales will increase. So it's like, it's a pull and push. It's like a big, big machine, I'm always telling. So not only focusing on Facebook ads.
No, I mean, it's exactly right. That you took the words out of my mouth, man. What I always say is paid social is gasoline to a brand building fire. You know, it's 100%. The whole, you know, another way that holistic approach might play out is this. If you have, as crazy as this might sound to a listener, if you have a brand that's a fashion brand that you're paying, you know, that you're generating a 10X for, and they come to you and they say, this is an extreme circumstance, but they come to you and they say, hey, my margins can't support this type of return on an ad spend, right? Then we have a bigger problem. You know, then we have another problem that we have to adjust. And that's where you put your pressure, right? That's who wins. The people who win are the marketers who win nowadays, to me, are the marketers who analyze their data and spend most of their time in their data and use that as a storytelling object to say, where do I need to put the pressure, right? And then they put the pressure in the right place, and then you see growth, and then that growth stagnates, and then you read the data again, and you put the pressure somewhere else. Maybe it's margins, maybe it's brand building, right? But that's one of the most quintessential things to leading a successful e-commerce company.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We even have clients that came to us because of Facebook ads. And then in the first 1 month, we don't even run a single ad because we are only focusing on high, like increasing the conversion rate and adding the email marketing backend. So we can leverage this, those things when we start Facebook ads. So I'm totally with you. So maybe you can explain us, maybe you can paint a picture, like from your perspective. I have a whole variety of listeners to the podcast from small to big. Like, could you paint a picture when you're just starting out a brand? How can you scale it quickly to 7 figures and then from 7 to 8 and then maybe even from 8 to 9? Like, maybe you can walk us through the journey.
Yeah, of course. I'll try to give my cliff notes here, as I feel like that conversation could probably go for a couple hours.
I think so.
So let's start with the first, right? Let's go 0 to 6 figures. To me, the biggest barrier to entry in the market for a company who's just starting out in the 0 to 6 figure range of monthly, right? Let's go monthly revenue. These are some of my favorite companies to work with, and this is really kind of the agency's bread and butter. And that strategy needs to revolve around one underlying principle, and that's trust. That's from my perspective, the reason why companies cannot scale from 0 to 6 figures of monthly revenue is because they have not generated the trust required for a customer to consider their product and actually, you know, move down the funnel from awareness to consideration to purchase. This is where, you know, kind of building the brand outside of Facebook comes into play from an early stage brand, from an infantile company. And the way that I have found the most success with leveraging trust is through influencer marketing. I know that it kind of has like this, I don't know, black hat, big question mark around influencer marketing. And if done incorrectly, influencer marketing can look a lot like burning cash. But if done effectively, and if done when casting a wide net and trying a wide variety of strategies at the beginning, essentially what you can do for an early stage brand that's trying to scale up to 6 figures is leverage the trust that influencers have spent years gaining from their followers and years implementing into their community. You can leverage that trust for your brand and grow and allow people, you know, convince people to give that product a try and essentially develop a very passionate early stage customer base for your company. So 0 to 6 figures to me is all about trust.
Absolutely. And in addition, what I see is like in the early stages, like we would also work a lot of like product market fit. Like, how can we position the product? How can we find the angles, the pain point, the desires, everything like that? This is also something to add, maybe.
It's amazing in that regard. Yeah, I agree. It's amazing in that regard how much what we found is the actual copy that you're using, the actual text overlays that you're using, you know, maybe the caption for the Facebook ad or the Instagram post, whatever that might be. If you leverage that properly, it's crazy. You'll find like, sometimes we'll find like one word where if we use it, it puts results to, from unprofitable into that range of, you know, a solid return on investment. I'll give you an example. We were working with a clay mask company. They sell like, you know, that organic clay, for skincare and in that niche. And we couldn't, you know, it took us time to figure out, this was probably 2017. It was taking us a long time to figure out how to move the needle with results. And as crazy as it is, casting a net with our copywriting is what made the difference for us. We learned that honing in on the message that acne solutions in the past were harsh chemical based. Like, we learned that that exact phrase, harsh chemicals, literally changed the entire e-commerce play from being from burning money from a slow bleed into a scalable, profitable spot, right? Because then we learned that message resonates with the customer. Okay, how do we make that apparent in our emails? How do we bring that to our influencer marketing? How do we, where can we target on Facebook? What type of copy can we use on Facebook? What about the website, right? It just bled through and created a common thread throughout the entire e-commerce play just by a simple split test on Facebook.
Absolutely. Yeah. One word can make the difference. I remember you just triggered a story in my mind. I remembered last year when we started with a jewelry brand in a yoga niche. First, we positioned the product differently with a different avatar, a different desire, different copy, stuff like this. Not profitable, zero, 0.7 ROAS on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But as soon as we switched to a more yoga wording and copywriting, we had the same creatives but a different wording, and instantly a return on ad spend from 4 to 5. Yeah. And then we knew, okay, this is the way to go. And now, like, actually we scaled this brand from 0 to 7 figures within 12 months now. Amazing. Only because of this, and the brand were like struggling 5 years before.
It goes back, right? It's listen to data and apply pressure. Listen to data, yes, and apply pressure. It's that continued cycle of improvement that, yeah, that's amazing. You know, that type of scale is in a lot of people's dreams, right? And just doing that simple, strategy, yeah, can make all the difference. So then going into sort of like, let's go from like six to seven figures of monthly revenue. That type of what does it take? You know, what are the primary strategies? What's the main focus from going from that level of revenue into where you're actually starting to, you know, create a long term lasting brand, is where I would say that seven figure of monthly revenue is honing in on. And for me, you've gained the trust of your consumer. You've listened to your data, you've continued to iterate, and now that's typically how you develop that kind of niche approach. The next thing that I think that you need to do that will catalyze your growth and put your company into that sort of, let's call it an empire phase, is hire the right people. It's people and technology, right? Hiring the right people and leveraging the proper people with the correct technology is what I see really creates that growth. I'll give you an example. When I came into Purelay, it was a 25 person company. And even at the level of revenue that we were at, I was a little bit skeptical about how big of a company we were. I had seen a lot of scenarios where there are businesses that are eight figure e-commerce brands and they have 5 people working for them full time. And that actually, I think that while that might be desirable from a quick fix, making a quick buck perspective, when you take it back and you actually consider what generates growth, and if you agree that it's people and technology, that will forever prohibit you from growing to that next level that you're trying to get if you cannot find the right people to leverage the proper technology to grow your business. And so what I saw from Purelay was absolutely no hesitation in going after top level talent when they perceived that the value was there. You know, we exploded not only in revenue, but we exploded in the amount of people that we had, and the amount of, if you work with anybody from Purelay, I think that you'll see it, the amount of ambitious, high achieving people that not me, but our HR team brought on board to grow the sales team, to grow the marketing team, to grow the warehouse team, et cetera. And this is where the growth came from. So I think that going from the 6 to 7 figure of monthly revenue portion is all about HR and bringing the right people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In addition to this, fun fact, my girlfriend is working in HR. She just recently switched a position, but before she was working for 4 years in a startup, grew this company from, I don't know, like 5 people to 50, all remotely. And she's like preaching each and every day for me and for my agency, like good values for your company, like find the right people, set expectations, find a good feedback structure. So I'm totally with you that the talents and the structure and the expectations, everything needs to be aligned with the goals of the company and the talents. Yeah,
100%.
Okay, so how can we grow even bigger? What's the secret?
Wow, that's the next level, right? So that's the area that I'm still figuring out for myself. Growing even bigger, where we're getting into eight figures of monthly revenue. I think that this is I'll give you an example. A good friend of mine, and I actually think he's a friend in common, Davidus, from Sugatan Agency, kind of planted this idea for me. It's inversion, right? So it's the idea of, okay, well, you know, maybe we're still trying to figure out how to get to 9 figures of yearly revenue, right? Maybe we're trying to figure out, maybe your business is trying to figure out how to get to 6 figures of revenue. But I think that what's easier to do in that scenario is to work inversion, right? What can I absolutely not do? You know, what will not get me to 9 figures of revenue, right? What can I do that, you know, maybe I don't know exactly what I can do to get to 9 figures of revenue, but I know that what I cannot do. And the first thing that I see when talking about getting from 8 figures to 9 figures is this: the larger that your company gets, the more inefficient it gets, period. I think that that's a universal truth. And I think that that's the reason, going back to our topic earlier of Gymshark, I think that that's the reason that companies like Gymshark are able to take, you know, to steal market share away from companies like Nike, right? As you grow as Nike, you're thousands of employees, and there's hierarchy implemented. There's tons of red tape for decision-making. And I see this personally with my agency. When we're talking to large brands and we're pitching large brands on working with our services, sometimes the reason that they don't do what we're pitching them on is literally because of red tape and bureaucracy. And maybe that's coming from my opinion, but I believe that that's the case. And so when you start to see that bureaucracy, and you start to see, let's say, unnecessary bureaucracy, when you start to see that pecking order and thing, you know, decisions that you used to make in a quick amount of time take now months and maybe even years. When you start to see that, you cannot do that and scale up to levels of revenue and continue to be a well-established brand in that space, or an innovative brand in that space. You cannot be innovative if you cut your legs out from under yourself with red tape. So that's really the biggest area that I see is the ability for those, at this point, large brands to continue to stay nimble, agile, and move quickly.
When you had our first conversation, you mentioned to me that you had a client, or you have a client in the agency, which had a pretty fast-paced scale. Are you comfortable to like share this case study with the listeners?
Yeah, for sure, of course.
Nice. So yeah, explain what happened.
Yeah, so this our agency works, speaking about influencer marketing and how it can build so much trust for your customer and catalyze growth. Our agency is a paid social agency. We have a couple of other services that we offer, but that's kind of the heart of it. We also have a preferred partnership, and we teamed up with an influencer agency. So this happened back in last summer, and we teamed up with this influencer agency and had our first client. This is a skincare company. There's a skincare company based in Salt Lake City, and we started working with them. When we started working with them, they were doing, 5 figures of monthly revenue. Very small company, kind of in the start, like extremely in the startup phase, interested about where they should put their cash, but also aggressive, excited. Just looking for whatever they could do to grow their business. We teamed up with this influencer agency and took them on as sort of a tandem client. So we were working hand in hand with the influencer agency and the brand. And through leveraging these principles that I'm talking about with a dark posting via influencer marketing, running with an aggressive model that was ROI focused and building the brand outside of Facebook, bringing in the right people from the influencer agency perspective to the brand, to our agency, bringing in the right people, and really just, sprinting a marathon. We were able to, in 6 months, take this company from about $60,000 of revenue to just under $10 million of revenue in 2020.
Wow, that's really huge. Was it worldwide company?
What was that? I'm sorry.
Was it, were they selling like worldwide? Was it just US?
Just the
worldwide.
US. Just the US.
Just the US.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So for Germany, Germany is way smaller than US, as you know. And for us, this short amount of time of such a scale is like insane. Sometimes we even see, okay, we saturated the market really quickly after like 1 million already. So we need to expand for like other countries in Europe. But US is like really, really big. This is, it's a great case study.
Yeah. And in Germany, I know that this type of scale is doable even with, you know, thinking of 84, 85 million people in Germany. Like, I think that this type of scale is certainly possible, but going, you know, again, going back to one of our, or to our previous point, listening to your data and adjusting, I think in Germany, if you do this too much and you become too much of a niche product, right? So if you could be turned into whatever, you just get to a spot where you've really limited your target demographic, that's when this becomes sort of in the realm of not possible, right? There's only so many glasses wearing yoga athletes who like jewelry or whatever, right? Whatever it might be, as you have a constricted target demographic, to pull off a scale like this, I would suggest that you cannot really constrict your niche of your target market that much in a country like Germany. In the US, maybe, but still, it makes it a lot harder, right? Because that's one of the beautiful things about that company was they sell skincare products for women.
It's a mass market.
Yeah, there's no bigger market than that, right? That's the largest market in the world, probably, for direct to consumer. So there is no, you know, you're only cutting out men, right? But women make 80% of the purchasing decisions online. So you're really, really diving into, there's no ceiling. You know, there's no cap to what you can do with that type of target demographic if you can make it work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So basically your strategy were like you leveraged influencers to gain trust quickly. And also, I mean, obviously you generated content and did you run it in the ads, right?
Yeah. The most focal point of the entire play was influencer marketing through and figuring out how to maximize that. We did generate content. But I believe that content played a more minor piece. Well, let me put it this. Let's take it this way. Influencer marketing generated content that we used, and that was the content approach to that play, right? We have preferred partnerships as an agency again with content agents or with content creation freelancers and that sort of thing. But when it comes down to it, the heaviest focus that was placed on that marketing approach from a direct to consumer paid social perspective and just Instagram organic and that sort of thing was leveraging influencer marketing to create, you know, influencers to create content.
Actually, I have one more question. Like for this case study, how did you were able to handle the logistic, the supply chain? Were it shipped from US? Were it even produced in US?
So it's one of the amazing things about that partner for us. They are so innovative in the not only product design, product manufacturing, and supply chain. They have connections to where so the client started out as a broker for skincare and then developed these extremely valuable, amazing relationships and is able to manufacture state-of-the-art products that are extremely high quality. They have chemists working internally, all of those kind of things that, you know, your average drop shipping brand isn't even in the realm of considering. They're not drop shipping. So that's another part, right, is they are direct to consumer, not using a 3PL, in-house logistics, which creates a really unique selling point. And then to answer your question about how they maintained logistics through that type of scale, Daniel, I have no idea. They're amazing, right? They're go-getters. They want, you know, they're hungry. I have nothing to do with their logistics. That is all on their master, you know, that is all a part of their masterpiece. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, and you have such an easier life if you like work with someone like a business owner who has already experience in the sort of scale or maybe like also like in e-commerce in general, because they understand like customer acquisition, like profitability and stuff like this. And yeah, sounds like you have a very great partner for this case study here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe what would even further their ability to, or perhaps the reason that they had the ability to scale that up logistically so fast is they had some brands before that they launched that didn't particularly work out, and I think taught them a lot of really valuable lessons, so that when the time was there and they had that gasoline dumping on top of that fire, they were able to support it, right? From a marketing perspective, I know that I'm sure listeners, and I'm sure you can resonate with this, there's almost nothing more frustrating than having the demand but not having the product. And so, I mean, they were able to seamlessly from my perspective, I'm sure they have a different story for you. Maybe you should have them on as well, but seamlessly step up to the plate and handle that logistics.
Totally. I have another very interesting topic, and it's actually pretty important for the current time, like attribution. I mean, it's a very big topic. I think we could talk another like 3 hours about this topic. But just recently, now we feel changes based on iOS 14 and the ad accounts. Yep. I actually have a pretty easy attribution model, which is like money in, money out. Yep. Like yep. We look at the bigger picture. Like how do you handle, or how do you work? Well, how do you make the attribution? Like, how do you charge?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love your model, first off, because I think that attribution is one of those things where you can spend, as I have, years focusing on this topic. And I think that at the end of the day, this is a rabbit hole that you can jump into and spend. You almost sidetrack yourself for years researching. At the end of the day, what's important is exactly what you just said, money in and money out. How we learned this strategy, or how we learned where my learnings came from with attribution. So I finally got a meeting with this guy, from Adidas, and he's in charge personally for $6 billion of yearly revenue for Adidas. And he said something that I will never forget, right? He said, "The Facebook Ads Manager is not an attribution tool. It is a tool for optimization, and essentially we had a conversation that surrounded the fact that if you use the Facebook Ads Manager as an attribution tool, it will cause you to invest far significant, in the wrong direction." And so after this conversation, I started a really heavy search, and I read tons of books, How Brands Grow by Byron Sharp. I love Occam's Razor I can't remember the guy's name right now, but the data evangelist at Google, and just started this long journey, the long and short of it, by the Institution of Practitioners for Advertising, this long journey into sort of the academia of marketing, which is an area that the executors very seldomly go. And essentially what this ended in was a unique and new view of the Facebook Ads Manager that was representative of the fact that it is a baseline for optimization and not a tool for evaluation. So we took a blended approach that used Google Analytics and an extremely constricted attribution window, and made our decisions based off of an entirely new data set than before, that was centered around what is real data and what is what is the best baseline for optimization that we can obtain, which to me is one day click, no view attribution in Facebook, and UTM data that show click behavior via curated data in Google Analytics. And so that is sort of how we took our approach with attribution. And actually, I believe that sort of advancement in attribution led to a head start when the change of iOS 14 took place with the constricted 7-day click, 1-day view attribution window.
Absolutely. So actually, like both of us, we are now in a position where it's not a huge, huge impact with the iOS 14. When I remember, like we were handling for years, like Excel spreadsheets, like really manual work. Like what is the revenue coming in? What is the ad spend on Facebook? What is the ad spend on Google? What is the cost of goods sold? Stuff like this. And then at the end, we were actually seeing what is the real like profit margin and the real ROAS. And then like last year, when we started with our agency, we actually implemented Supermetrics and Microsoft Data Studio to automate everything. And In addition, actually this week, I think tomorrow is the onboarding with one of our bigger clients. We're introducing Rockerbox. Yep. Have you ever worked with Rockerbox before?
I've never worked with Rockerbox, but I commend you. The reason I haven't worked with Rockerbox is most businesses that I work with, like the, or most businesses that I hear from, you know, they're big businesses and that are considering Rockerbox, and they haven't taken that initial step into Google Analytics and UTM tagging. And to me, it's like, you guys are skipping all of the in, all of the information, you know, all of the 1 to 5 and going straight to 5 to 10. Like, why, if you, if, why are you considering Rockerbox if you don't have UTM tags and yes. Google Analytics set up and correctly running, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You wouldn't see anything. Like,
no,
you don't have data. Yeah, basically.
Exactly, right? And so I commend you. I will be interesting to hear what your journey is into Rockerbox. And, you know, I know Heroes is another solution similar to that. Very interesting to me as well. But we have not taken that dive yet.
Yeah, I'm super happy to keep you updated. I mean, we are really strict and we teach every media buyer the UTM parameters and stuff, because at the end, that makes the difference, and you can make decisions way, way better than only on Facebook ad account. So,
well, and even if down the road you say, Google Analytics isn't interesting for us, there's something wrong, X, Y, and Z, right? Even if down the road that's your understanding, you still have curated data, as opposed to down the road thinking, man, we should have been using UTMs forever. We need to use this for our data. And then you have no data collected and curated because you haven't been using it, you know, in the first place. That's like, it's baby steps, right? That's step number one.
Absolutely. And just recently I had conversations with a business owner, because I'm always like preaching, like seeing the buying journey, like, it's not really linear. Of course, if you have like a low ticket product and impulse buy and everything, but you will also have the buyer journey, which is like, today I see an ad, maybe I click, in 3 days I Google it, your brand, I come to your store, I opt into your email flow, and then, I don't know, like 3 months, nothing is happening. And then I buy because of, I don't know, Black Friday on an email. You won't see this in the Facebook Ads Manager at all. So, and even one more thing, and this is maybe interesting, like, what is your opinion on this? So my mindset is, and I've got this from Ezra Firestone, I think 2 years ago. Consider you have a channel, for example, Google Ads or email marketing, which is by nature very, very profitable, especially email marketing. Why not taking like profit, like a piece of the profit from those channels, and push it back into Facebook Ads Manager to be able to scale even more aggressively? Like, I'm not seeing a lot of like owners talking about this, like lower eight-figure, like 7 and 6-figure brands or something.
Exactly. And you know, just going back to one of your comments, you know, even taking that a step further with the idea that your Facebook Ads Manager won't show that revenue. And then in a different scenario, you have Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and email. And within a month, all those touch points are deployed to convince your customer to purchase. And then great, your customer buys, right? In that scenario, all of them will take credit for it, right? Yes. And then that will lead you, as Simon Peel at Adidas was saying, that will lead you to overinvest. I'm sorry, Simon Fields at Adidas was saying, that will lead you to overinvest in every channel for the same amount of revenue, right? So as you're saying, that's exactly how we operate, Daniel, is we call it scaling at a 0x ROAS. that's sort of the joke that we make, right? Where you want more budget on Facebook, right? Good for you, right? That's something that you need to earn. So either that money, so where's that money going to come from? Either that money is going to come from, unless you're VC backed or you have private equity investors, either that money is going to come from profit that you've made on Facebook, or as you're saying, understanding the fact that you cannot go outside of Klaviyo in email. And like, you can do cold emailing, but does that really, I don't think that actually works, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot step outside of the bounds of Klaviyo. So why don't we take the revenue that is generated, the massive profits that are created from Klaviyo, and invest that into Facebook to scale at a, air quotes, 0x return on ROAS.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So nice that we are aligned here. So I see a lot of like, the same topics, the same like thinking process about the things. And I mean, at the end, you were mentioning your holistic approach in the beginning of the podcast, and this is like part of it, like seeing like a brand and like a online store or e-com brand like as a holistic thing and not like split it out by okay, we only look on Facebook ads, but seeing the big picture.
Exactly, man. And there's the final evolution, right? A holistic marketing approach requires a holistic attribution approach as well. You cannot have one without the other. Otherwise, you will be investing significant in the wrong places. You know, and just to take this a step further, when we put in, you know, one of the cool things that I can hear about in the way that you talk about attribution is that you're really researching this. There's so many people in the market. There's so many gurus in the marketing community. There's so many people in the marketing community that will never research this because a lot of times agency, right? Your agency won't look into this because an agency is paid based off of a percentage of spend and they want to convince you to spend more money on Facebook, right? A social media platform is not going to show you this because, again, they want you to invest more on the platform. And then lastly, an internal team oftentimes won't be focusing on this because they don't have time to. So it's so important that you're, and it's so cool that you're researching this and have researched this at such depth, because what this has done for PureLay is if you look at let's take May into consideration. If you look at 2019 May and you look at 2020 May for PureLay, the spend is about the exact same on Facebook, but the revenue is about 4 to 5x.
Wow.
From Facebook, right? Because we understood, we had the hindsight, we had the job security, we had the relationship built. We understood that I had the freedom to dive into this topic of attribution and prove to people that maybe the investment here is not going to produce the additional growth. You know, maybe that's not true for your company. For many, it's not. But we saw that smarter spending, you know, work smarter, not harder, right? Smarter spending instead of more spending was much more efficient and effective at growing the company than, you know, taking that screenshot once we spent $1 million a month on Facebook.
Absolutely. And I want to give you even one more golden nugget, because actually I never saw someone talking about this topic. What we found out in doing Black Friday, when we generated over $5 million in revenue, we really leveraged the art of email marketing and Facebook ads at the same time. So after Black Friday, we did the analysis, and I was speaking with David about this topic. What we saw, each and every time we sent out an email blast, the CPMs on Facebook went down, really dropped, like up to 50%. So like, because for Facebook, like the Facebook algorithm sees, okay, wow, a lot of like positive signals on the store. A lot of people are clicking and buying because you have the warm traffic from the email marketing. And this is like another thing. If you understand this, we always leverage those both things together. Beautiful. Because we understood this.
Yeah. Beautiful. That's a beautiful take on a multi-channel marketing approach, right? We see the exact same thing with influencers. It doesn't matter. You know, that's the point, right? It doesn't matter where you're building your brand outside of Facebook. What matters is that you are building your brand outside of Facebook, right? That's what matters.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so amazing. Now we come back to what you said with like building the brand outside, and it doesn't matter. Is it email marketing, influencer, or maybe even Google ads, or even an Amazon FBA business? If you have like a channel which is totally profitable, reinvest in like Facebook, and both will win from that.
Exactly.
All right, John, we come to an end from the podcast. What are your topics for this year? Is there any specific thing you want to learn for your business or even personally this year?
You know, I think that the biggest one to tackle immediately and off the bat is going to be the obvious, you know, impending iOS 14. That's where most of my energy, research, time, you know, and brainstorming is circling around. You know, that's sort of one that's and one of my favorite quotes that I continue to say, and that I think is just so brilliant about this is, as marketers, we're called to be surgeons, not doctors. Right. Like I'm not sitting here trying to diagnose exactly what's going to happen because of the change with iOS 14. What I'm trying to do is equip myself with the understanding of how to pivot because of it, you know, to be greedy when others are fearful. Right. There's so much opportunity that's going to come out of this change. There's so much, you know, capacity for growth, especially with the agency. understanding, thought-provoking, you know, leadership that's going to be required from the, you know, because of the pivot with iOS. That's where most of my time is going right now. And then additionally, fine-tuning the, you know, continuing to fine-tune the approach of going back, you know, pivoting my focus back to bringing companies from zero to 20 million of yearly revenue. That's sort of been not absent of mine, but since I'm going back into the industry of agencies, that's where we're honing in and specializing, right, is zero to 20 million. So where I've been in the, where I've been and continue to exist in the, you know, 25 to 50, 50 to 100 space, I'm kind of zoning back towards with the agency, zero to 20 million. And then, yeah. And then lastly, my focus is a little bit of a, I guess, a prelude, that amazing partnership that we have with that company in Salt Lake City. We are going to be continuing that relationship, actually with another brand. So hopefully we can be talking about that. That'll be launching in the summer of this year, hand in hand. We're going to be hoping, you know, we're going to be pivoting ourselves as an agency to more of an incubator, and helping, continuing to help entrepreneurs grow their businesses hand in hand, as opposed to with an agency relationship.
Amazing. Amazing. So, how can people find you? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, man, of course I'm around. Obviously the obvious is my agency's website, which is voltagency.co. That's the most readily available. We have a form on there that I'd love for, it always is extremely exciting when we get submissions. So if you're interested in just having a conversation or whatever I can help with, please fill that out. And then additionally, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, my name is always John Andrew Hagen. That's my full name. So, you can find me there. Always trying to share insights, always trying to collaborate with other brand builders, and excited to do so.
So John, thank you so much for your time. You are a big part now of the podcast. You provided a lot of value to the listeners and they will appreciate it. I will let you know what they text me on Instagram, because after every episode they text me and have questions. So thanks a lot that you were here, that I had the possibility to record an episode with you. And I keep you updated with the attribution stuff, with the Rockerbox, and hope to see you soon.
Please do, Daniel. Thank you very much for the conversation.
Wir hoffen, dass dir diese Folge wieder gefallen hat. Wenn du auch endlich konstant und profitabel 6- bis 7-stellige Umsätze mit deinem Onlineshop erreichen möchtest, dann gehe jetzt auf ecomsecrets.de und buche eine kostenlose Strategiesession. In diesem 45-minütigen Gespräch zeigen wir dir ganz genau, welche Schritte du umsetzen musst, um profitabel skalieren zu können. Es sind immer die gleichen 5 Elemente, die du meistern musst, um deinen Onlineshop erfolgreich zu machen. Du willst wissen, welche das sind? Gehe jetzt auf ecomsecrets.de und finde es heraus.